You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Coming up, we talk about how the media should cover Donald Trump after a contentious election season.
Right now, we're taking a look at man's best friend, the dog. Dogs have been around humans for a really long time. They're the first domesticated animal, and they're the only carnivore to be domesticated. Scientists don't know exactly how long dogs have been around, but that could change thanks to some new technology and new partnerships in the science world.
Gemma Tarlak joins us now for more. She's a senior editor at Discover Magazine based in Waukesha. Gemma, welcome back.
Hello, and a very happy Thanksgiving week to everyone with an earshot.
Back at ya. Well, Gemma, this is exciting. I know this is a topic that is dear to your heart. You love dogs. But for human beings in general, what does studying dogs, what can it tell us about maybe ourselves, humans?
Well, you know, the really interesting thing, as Rob mentioned, is that we have had this relationship with dogs for much longer than any other animal in terms of a domesticated and a companion, quite frankly. And whether you're talking a hunting companion or a sitting on the sofa watching TV companion, and they are the only animal that we know was domesticated well before agriculture. So when we were still these nomadic bands of hunter-gatherers roaming all around, we already had domesticated dogs. So all the other templates that we've figured out for how people domesticated cows and cats and goats, none of those apply to the dog. So it's this great mystery, and it's also the longest, you know, interspecies relationship we've had.
So before this new research that we're going to spend time on, what was the state of the art in figuring out where the dog-human relationship got started?
Well, you know, it goes way back to Darwin, actually, thinking different species of dogs descended from different animals. But more recently, once we were able to start sequencing the genomes of individual animals, scientists really started digging into the genetics of the dog, trying to figure out its origins that way. And the crazy thing is, like, in the last 10 years, there have been a whole bunch of studies, and they each came to different conclusions, not only about when dogs were domesticated, but about where as well. And part of the problem was they were all using different data sets. And, you know, dogs, we've had a long relationship with them, and it has been a complicated relationship. A lot of it has involved artificial breeding, where we're selecting for specific traits, floppy ears, short coat, and that actually really screws up the genetic clock that can tell us how far back a species goes. So there's that problem. There's the problem that even after dogs were domesticated, they were still interbreeding with wolves. So their genes are really messed up, basically, in terms of kind of a clear-cut path to walk back to the roots of their family tree, so to speak. So it's been really complicated, and what we've really needed to understand the origins of dogs are ancient DNA samples from very old dogs and proto-dogs, and that is what we're finally getting.
So tell us about some of those. What are those very old samples you're talking about, and what have they told us so far?
Well, they're still in the collection and analysis process for this really awesome international collaboration, but we had the first paper, and the first paper came out in June, and they, based on several ancient DNA samples, including one very high-value sample from a 4,800-year-old dog in Ireland, they are proposing an actual dual-origin theory of domestication. Two separate domestication events, one in Western Europe and the other in Eastern Asia. And this is the first time that researchers have said, we think domestication happened twice, because we have thought all along domestication would be very difficult to pull off. I mean, you're talking about basically taking an apex predator, the human being's direct competition, and turning them into, you know, a buddy, essentially, or at least an animal with a close working relationship with you. That's not easy to do. So they think it only happened once, until this new genetic data that came out in June says, yeah, we think it may have happened twice. So that's already advancing what we know quite a bit.
It happened twice, apparently, but as I understand what you've written, Gemma, all of our dogs today only came from one of those two domestications.
Yeah, sadly, you know, we can see marks of the Western European domestication event in that dog from Ireland and some of the other ancient DNA samples. But what they think happened was more than 15,000 years ago, possibly 18,000 years or more, they're still working out the timeline, these two domestication events happened. And then over time, the European dog line died out. And as the Asian dogs moved into Europe, it replaced them. So every dog around now is descended from the Asian domestication event.
How can scientists tell whether a fossil of a dog skeleton is a wild dog or a dog that's been domesticated? How do they know the difference?
That's a great question, and actually it gets to some of the controversies in this field that there are some canid skulls that are more than 30,000 years old that a few researchers are calling dogs, and other researchers are saying, no way, could we have dogs been around 30,000 years ago? These are just some kind of ancestral wolf. And one of the reasons they say, some researchers say, these may actually be dogs is because the skulls in particular are shorter and wider than those of wolves. And that actually, it's a really neat thing. It has to do a little bit with what's called domestication syndrome. And as you domesticate an animal, choosing for tameness and kind of social behavior so you can actually get along with it without worrying about getting your head bitten off, as you domesticate that animal, weird physiological changes that you are not selecting for occur along with the change in behavior. And it does include a shortening and a widening of the skull. So they think finding those shorter, wider 30,000-plus-year-old canid skulls means they were already undergoing domestication.
Talking to Gemma Tarlak from Discover Magazine, looking at the origin of dogs and their long relationship with humans. Gemma, we've talked a lot about where and when dogs might have arisen. Let's talk a little bit about the how. And I gather some of the researchers you talked to are trying to figure out exactly how that transition from wolf, competitive predator, to family buddy, hunting dog, whatever happened.
Yeah, and you know, that is kind of the $64,000 plus question, because I'm very confident that within a few years the researchers will be able to take all this genetic data that they're gathering and sort out the where and the when to a pretty precise, you know, pretty fine degree. But the how, I think, will always be a bit of a question, because, you know, again, this happened when we were nomadic hunter-gatherers. The archaeological record is really sparse. It's not like with cows where you can find, you know, a 10,000-year-old cow pen and be able to say, okay, they kept the cows here. That wasn't like that when dogs were domesticated. So one model is basically that these ancestral wolves were following around the hunter-gatherers and feeding off the scraps, and the hunter-gatherers noticed, hey, that it would be useful to have this dog. And eventually, over time, choosing for tameness, were able to domesticate the dogs. But other researchers think that, you know, a lot of hunter-gatherer societies actually adopt baby animals and raise them right within the tribe or the clan, and they think that might have happened, that they might have been raised for kind of as pets or maybe even for ritual purposes, and they might have been domesticated that way. So we're not sure, and I don't think we'll ever be sure. There'll always be a little bit of mystery.
And, Gemma, there's a funny part in the article where, you know, the point is that dogs are motivated. You can motivate them, it sounds like, with food, which is why apparently we don't have warrior cats going into battle, because, you know, no one's going to get a cat to do that.
Yeah. And you know, one of the researchers I talked to, I have to say, I talked to 8 or 9 different researchers for this story, and they were all so passionate about the topic and so full of great anecdotes. It was just a joy to report this. And one of them, Adam Boyko, he's a geneticist at Cornell University. He was talking about, you know, the difference between dogs and cats. And, you know, dogs were super useful. They could carry your pack. They could help you hunt. They could be guard dogs. They were, you know, I mean, you know how dogs are. They're kind of like, hey, let's do something human. And he said, yeah, you know, when you look at it, we had dogs trained to be war dogs, outfitted and armored and marching in battle. And he's like, you know, we never had war cats.
It's a hilarious vision, though.
I want to bring on a caller now. We've got Chris joining us on the line in Winona, Minnesota. Chris, hi. Chris, are you there?
Chris.
No Chris. Okay. Chris had a question, wondering if there are any links to dogs or wolves working with any of the other Homo subspecies, other hominids. My guess is, Gemma, that would be way too early. Is that right, given when they were actually domesticated?
Yeah, you know, that's a fantastic question. But as far as we can tell from what we know in the fossil record, there's no overlap between, say, Neanderthals and dogs. But, you know, you never know. The fossil proving me wrong may be out there, but there is a kind of a gap of several thousand years, at least, between dogs and Neanderthals.
And, Gemma, it sounds like there was some unusual collaboration in the science that came out of Oxford University. Why did all these people get together to figure this out?
Well, basically, one of them, he's an evolutionary biologist by the name of Gregor Larson. He got a nice grant with his team saying, hey, go find the origins of dogs. And he basically got all the other leading researchers in the field together because, you know, there had been a lot of infighting and a lot of arguing, a lot of controversy. But he basically pulled them all together and said, hey, we can actually solve this if we work together and collaborate. So that happened a couple of years ago. And since then, there's been this tremendous wave of collaboration. And all of the researchers I talked to, just about all of them, are working with each other now, which is really just a great thing to see and a very heartening thing to see in research.
Gemma, earlier I said dogs are the only carnivores to be domesticated by humans. I guess you could include cats in that if you agree that cats are domesticated at this point. The jury's still out on that. But
hey.
I've had cats. Gemma, briefly as we wrap up, this is a really unique relationship. There's nothing else in the human life like this human-dog relationship, is there?
Yeah, that's correct. And you're right that cats are obligate carnivores. They have to eat meat. But dogs are the only large carnivores. When you think about it, we have never domesticated lions or tigers or bears. Oh, my. So it's special. And, you know, one of the things I loved reading about and talking to the researcher about, there are these cemeteries all over the world, especially in places like Siberia, where people and their dogs were buried together, and the dogs were buried with honor and dignity. And, you know, it's not like they sacrificed the dog when the person died to accompany them to the afterlife. In several graves, the person died, and then years later,
wow,
the dog clearly died of old age, and they opened the grave and put the dog in beside the person, which I love.
Good place to leave it. Thanks to Gemma Tarlak with Discover Magazine based in Waukesha, talking to us about the origins of dogs.
Coming up after the news, we'll look at what to expect in the relationship between the media and the Trump White House. You're listening to Central Time.